Praise and HOAs. We're here each Sunday at 11 on 850 WFTL in South Florida. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today with attorney Eric Glazer from Glazer & Sachs, PA. Eric is board certified by the Florida Bar in Condominium and Plan Development Law. The firm has attorneys in Fort Lauderdale and Orlando. We're here each week to answer all your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from 1 minute to the next. We love it. We would love to get the phone lines going early, but we do have a guest first, so you just want to keep that in mind. Answering all of your condo and HOA questions, probably get to you guys by the bottom of the hour. No matter where you are in the state, give us a call right here in our studio on our toll-free number, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com. And by clicking on the email the show tab.
All right, good morning, everybody. If you're a fan of the show, of course, and like to read our blogs and newsletters, just make sure to go to our website, condocrazeandhoas.com. Join our email list. By joining each week, you can get announcements about the show. You can find out who our guests are. Great one today. Read our blog, our free seminars. By the way, one coming up December 21st. If you want to register again, that's December 21st.
Wow.
You can register, of course, by going to our website, condocrazeandhoas.com. You can also get copies of our newsletters, updates on the law, and a whole lot more. Of course, every Monday, we do a blog at hoa-condoblog.com. Again, hoa-condoblog.com. Tomorrow's topic, remember the song by the Bee Gees, Staying Alive?
Staying Alive.
Staying Alive. Well, that's what our blog topic is tomorrow. And really, what's it about? With all the confusion about whether to hold board meetings and unit owner meetings in person or not, what's required, what isn't required, you know what my advice this holiday season? Err on the side of staying alive.
There you go.
Use technology for your meetings. That's the bottom line, you know. Thank God it looks like Pfizer's starting to roll out those vaccines.
Actually, Randy Katz, we spoke to him about
Katz,
it because they are going to be one of the two hospitals in South Florida that would be the Memorial Regional Hospital in Broward that will be they'll have 20,000 vials of the vaccine this week.
Yes, this week, correct. So, of course, the people on the front lines are going to be getting that first.
Deserve
and they
it.
Certainly deserve it.
Who
no
deserve to be
about
the Time
it.
Person of the Year. But
I don't even want to talk about Time Magazine. You see, don't get me going
I'm sorry,
there.
I
was
nauseous.
Calm. I was relaxed. You know what I'm saying? Cannot stand what Time Magazine did. What a slap in the face to the medical workers across the country. Yeah. Terrible.
We need a life ombudsman.
Exactly. But last week we announced we're going to have a special guest this week, and that special guest is Spencer Hennings.
Yay.
And Spencer is the new Florida Condominium Ombudsman, and he's on the line. So, Spencer, welcome to the Condo Craze and HOA's
welcome,
radio
Spencer.
Show. We really appreciate you showing up today.
Hey there, Eric. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show.
Great. We'd love to have you. And I want to spend a few minutes going over the actual statute. You know, maybe not everybody understands. There's an actual statute that created the official position of the Florida Condominium Ombudsman. And it was first created, I believe, under Governor Bush. I remember, I think the first Condominium Ombudsman was Virgil Rizzo. And I do have the honor of being the first attorney that did an election with the first condo ombudsman. So we helped get it right off the ground. And so the first thing is that this position that you have, I want to be clear, you were appointed by the governor, right?
That's right. I was appointed by the governor in July of this past year. And I did not know that, but that's very interesting that you did the first election for Dr. Virgil Rizzo.
Yes, I did. And I remember where we did it. Unfortunately, the condo where we did it didn't have a rec center or an office to actually hold it in. So we held it outdoor on a hot night by the swimming pool, and we're counting ballots in the dark. So yeah, it was not fun. I'm surprised they didn't quit on that night. But anyway, even though you know this position is obviously filled by the governor, it's clearly a position that has lots of rules that prevent you from actually getting caught up in the politics of all this, right? I mean, if you look at the statute, there's a lot of things that you personally are allowed to do and that are not, you're not allowed to do because they took this condo position and they wanted to remove you from the politics of it all. Can you kind of explain to our readers, you know, what your what the qualifications are and how you have to avoid political questions?
Sure, absolutely. And you mentioned the statute. I believe it's 718-5011.
Yes.
And the statute has a whole provision about this topic that essentially prevents the ombudsman from any sort of political involvement or business involvement that conflicts with the job duties. For political involvement, I believe there's language that there should be no soliciting votes for candidates. The ombudsman may not become a candidate for any sort of public office during his or her time as the ombudsman. And what I'll say is that, for me at least, politics is not something that is even on my radar.
Right.
I feel that I'm here to do a job.
That's
and
great.
On a day-to-day basis, politics do not come up at all for me.
That's great. And again, that was the intent of the statute, to really keep politics out of it. You know, there's been some fights before, quite frankly, in that office. And hopefully going forward, those fights are not going to wind up happening all over again. But I want to talk specifically about what powers the statute actually gives you. And there's so many powers you actually have. And I'll read from one portion of the statute. It says to prepare and issue reports and recommendations to the governor, to the department, the division, the advisory council on condos. You're even supposed to give recommendations to the president of the Senate, the speaker of the House, right, on any matter or subject within the jurisdiction of the division. And you can make recommendations for appropriate legislation as well. Now, you and I spoke about this the other day. Your job, as we just noted, is to specifically make recommendations, again, to the Speaker of the House regarding legislative changes to Florida condo law. And I can tell you, and trust me on this one, my listeners can tell you, that in this area of the law, the Florida bar is dominated, and I mean dominated, by developer lawyers and association lawyers who only represent boards. There's very little representation there by attorneys who represent the unit owners. I mean, when you think about it, it's amazing. You can have a 500-unit condo, right? And the people that actually get represented in Tallahassee are the five of those 500 that are serving on the board, but not the 500 unit owners, believe me. And typically what goes on, and you probably knows this, you know, CAI, that's an organization that's dominated by businesses who cater to condo and HOA communities. So when hearings are held in front of the Senate and House committees, you know, I get up there all the time, and the Florida Bar gets up there, they claim to represent unit owners. CAI gets up there, and they claim to represent unit owners. And I'll tell you, in this attorney's opinion, nothing can be farther from the truth. They don't. I've been alone up there to a large degree fighting for the rights of the average unit owner. And I can tell you that our listeners want to know once and for all, if they now have a fellow fighter in you, you know, is there someone from the ombudsman's office, or are you now in the corner for them, unlike they feel that CAI is, or even the Florida Bar is, quite frankly?
That's a great question. I will say, Eric, I appreciate that you are a fighter for the people. I do appreciate that. As for my recommendations to the legislature, I don't have a finalized list yet. It's something that is evolving, and I think it's important for myself to listen to everyone's perspective and then make a decision on what I think is best. But what I will say is that based on the matters and the things that I see on a day-to-day basis, Eric, I think that you and I probably have a very similar perspective on many of these issues.
Yes, must. Well, I heard you the other day tell a group of Florida lawyers, quite frankly, I thought it was fantastic, that they don't live in the same world as you do. Your job as the condominium ombudsman is you get calls all day long from probably all around the state saying, hey, this president just got caught stealing this. This vice president just got caught stealing that. There hasn't been an election in my condo in 5 years. And, you know, most of the attorneys that are up there at claiming to represent community associations, they don't deal with those things every day like you do. They deal with the developers, they deal with the boards of directors themselves, and they don't deal with the types of issues that you deal with every single day. You actually understand that there's some problems out there, and I'm not so sure that everybody else understands that.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And that, you know, when I address that group of attorneys, I preface my statement by saying, listen, I know that you all are board-certified attorneys in the world of condo law, and you all operate within the law. So I would assume that your associations that you represent also operate within the law. But I deal with associations that don't operate within the law, that aren't represented by attorneys such as yourselves.
Yep.
So the type of things that I see and the recommendations for the legislature that I'm planning on making, it's not really about you and your associations. It's about the ones that aren't acting within the law.
Of course.
And aren't respecting the law. And are creating nightmare situations for our Florida taxpayers that are living in these condo associations.
Hey, all you have to do is read that Miami-Dade grand jury report of a few years ago, and that tells the story. I'm not saying that that right. exists everywhere, but that Florida grand jury report in and of itself was frightening, to say the least. And I can tell you, I've dealt with situations in my career many times where elections were thrown, where records were destroyed. You know, and the problem is that, you know, a lot of the unit owners that deal with those problems day in and day out, they don't have a voice in Tallahassee. And in all candor, Spencer, they're looking to you for that voice. And I kind of feel good about it, and I think we're headed in the right direction. But let's do this. Let's take our first break of the hour. What we'll do is we're going to interview Spencer for a little while longer, and then we'll open up the line so that people can ask questions. Taking your calls. You'll be on hold for a little while. 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Never wait for that first drop of water to leak from your ceiling before you decide to check your roof. Once damage sets in, repairs become more expensive. Invest in a true life cycle roof management program with Best Roofing and protect your building's assets. A roof management service agreement with Best Roofing will prolong the life of your roof, preventing premature roof failure. Let Best Roofing help your association save money with our annual service agreements that prevent leaks, provide emergency service, and increase the life expectancy of your roof. We give you a realistic budget, so there are no unwelcome surprises. Our roof service agreements also provide for cleaning all debris, minor maintenance, sealing and topping off all pitch pans, caulking, and more. And should a storm hit or other emergency occur, clients with service agreements get priority service. To schedule your free condo roof analysis, call Best Roofing at 954-941-9111. That's 954-941-9111. Visit our website at bestroofing.net.
Ah, the finer things. Spectacular wine, exotic vacations, or just the time to enjoy the view from your condo? Affinity Management Services gives you time to enjoy them. We provide full-service community association management, including site, administrative, and financial services. We handle everything from complaints and collection of assessments to emergency services and maintenance, giving you more time. Fully accredited by the National Board of Certification for Community Association Managers, we promise service delivered with integrity and respect. And we're endorsed by the Better Business Bureau for our streamlined and professional approach to quality service. Join hundreds of board members across South Florida and call us today at 305-325-4243. Affinity Management Services, simplifying your life to make time for the finer things. 305-325-4243. AffinityManagementServices.com.
If your association has ever been through a major restoration or renovation project, you know it can be a complicated, expensive, and stressful undertaking. Noise, dust, unexpected problems, and that C word no one wants to hear, change orders. But it doesn't have to be chaotic. DSS Condo is here to help you through the condo project management process. Most projects go over schedule and over budget. Without an expert, independent advocate in their corner, associations are exposed to cost overruns, low quality results, and long-term disruption for owners. DSS Condo is Florida's leading association project management firm. They provide tailored, expert construction management services for all types and sizes of association projects, helping you maintain control of the chaos. DSS Condo now offers customizable project management packages that can be modified to meet your association's needs and budget. And now services Miami, Broward, Palm Beach, and Collier counties. Contact DSS at 305-985-3772 or by visiting dsscondo.com. That's 305-985-3772.
Is your condominium starting to crumble? Are your balconies breaking down? Are pieces of concrete and stucco flying off your building, making the building look ugly and putting your residents at risk? Are you in need of your 40-year certification for your building? If so, you need Carousel Development and Restoration right away. Carousel is a concrete restoration company specializing in high-rise condominiums throughout South Florida. Whether you need balcony repairs, garage decks, full deck replacement, rail fabrication and installation, impact windows and doors, or painting and waterproofing, Carousel has you covered. After all, we're South Florida's largest locally owned structural restoration contractor and have been located in Delray since 1979. We know how tough it is to start projects in your condo. Where do you begin? You begin by calling the licensed and insured experts at Carousel Restoration for a free estimate. 561-272-3700. That's 561-272-3700.
Or visit the website cdri.net.
Here on 850 WFTL, Karen Curtis with attorney Eric Glazer. We will be taking your calls about everything condo and HOA related once we get finished with our interview with the Florida Condominium Ombudsman.
Yes, so back to Spencer Henning. So, Spencer, part of your job is also to act as a liaison between the Division of Condominiums, unit owners, boards of directors, you know, members of the community, managers. You're the guy that everybody complains to. You've got to come up with the solutions to all of this. Now, I'm guessing when you get to work in the morning, your phone is probably already ringing off the hook with people complaining, like I said, that money's missing, there hasn't been elections, maybe even our water is being turned off because the board hasn't paid the water bill. You know, how about, this is common, I deal with this all the time, our manager is running the show, we don't even know who the board of directors is. And what do you begin to do every single morning when I'm guessing you're deluged with these types of calls?
Yeah,
where do you start?
That's a great question. And the first thing I'll say is that it's not just my phone, it's my entire team's phone ringing off the hook and emails as well.
Right,
so I have
sure.
a great staff of seven full-time team members all located in Fort Lauderdale.
So that's interesting. Hey, Spencer, let me stop you there for a second, yeah. because there was, and I got to tell you, I learned this recently. You just said all located in Fort Lauderdale. The thought process is down here, you know, most of the condos located in the state are in South Florida. And there's this thought that, you know, everything is in Tallahassee. Why is everything so far away? But that's not true. You're located in South Florida, right?
Absolutely. And I can thank Secretary Halsey Bashirs of the DBPR for that.
Right, great move.
He was the person that really championed this idea of having a hungry new ombudsman that is going to be located in South Florida.
Nice.
And that is going to be the boots on the ground guy. Because really, I think about 80% of the issues in condos come out of South Florida.
Right.
So I don't think it makes sense to have the ombudsman in Tallahassee.
Yeah, oh, right. Exactly. So now at least it feels for the people down there that, hey, we got somebody who's down here but that has influence in Tallahassee. It's great. All right, so go back. What do you do? What does your staff do every morning when the phones are ringing off the hook with these crazy complaints?
Sure. So there's different type of issues. You know, first, we would look and see, is the potential act a violation of actual Florida law, or is it a violation of someone's individual condominium document?
Right.
Because, as you know, condos are corporations. And the latter would be considered a private contractual matter. And it's, of course, going to be treated a little differently by the state.
Right.
Now, if it's a violation of 718, what I do is I use sort of a common sense and more so educational approach to get issues resolved.
Okay.
So I facilitate what you could call voluntary meetings.
Sure.
And kind of act as a mediator and work out a solution through education and making sure that both sides understand what their responsibilities are,
right.
what their duties and what their rights are. And that's been a really successful approach because it allows me to resolve issues that otherwise would be complaints with the division.
Sure.
And I think anytime I can do that, it's a great thing because it frees the division to then, you know, spend more time and energy on things that they need to do because I wasn't able to resolve them or because it wasn't brought to me first.
Right. So you'd like to, now, and this is such a wonderful segue into where I want to go next. Well, let me ask you this, obviously. So if things can be taken care of with an educational approach, I get it. But what do you do when when you uncover evidence of a crime, for example, that, hey, someone stole the money from this account.
Yeah, you're an attorney.
Yeah, what do we do if, you know, there's real evidence of theft that occurred?
Sure. So one of the first things I did as ombudsman is go out and start building relationships with the state attorney's offices and the police departments throughout South Florida. And I'm still working on doing that throughout the state, but in the tri-counties down here, I have a good relationship with all those offices. So when I uncover evidence of a criminal act, you know, not something that the division would regulate, but an actual criminal act like embezzlement or fraud, I then would coordinate with the police and the state attorney's offices to do everything possible to make sure that a prosecution is underway.
Got it. So the unit owners can rest assured here that if the ombudsman's office comes into contact with direct evidence, easily provable evidence, that a board has stolen money, you're going to take that to the next level, meeting the state attorney's office.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, you know, you gave me a wonderful segue into our next topic, which is taking an educational approach. And part of your job description says that you shall coordinate and assist in the preparation and adoption of educational and reference material, you know, and endeavor with private or volunteer providers of these services so that these resources are made available to the largest possible audience. That's part of your job description. Now, I got to tell you, I'm proud of some accomplishments I've had in my career, but I think what I'm proud of the most is that it was my life's ambition to educate as many board members and managers as possible. And I'm proud to say I've board certified over 21,000 people all over the state of Florida.
Imagine.
So, you know, where am I going with this? You know, as you know, board members can get certified in Florida one of two ways. One is by signing, and I'll say it, a stupid, silly, self-serving affidavit that says, I read my documents and I promise to enforce them. That's the lazy man's chicken way out. And the other is to take an approved class. Now, I floated a bill last year that actually got filed, and it would have done away with the possibility of getting certified by signing that ridiculous affidavit. And I'd love to know if I have your support on that. You know, what's your position, especially now since the classes are free and you can take them online in the comfort and privacy of your own home? You know, what's your thoughts?
I don't have an official position on it yet, but I do believe that everyone should take the board member certification course upon being elected to the condo board. I think that people don't realize that condos are actually corporations that happen to have budgets of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in budget per year. So in addition to that, there are many laws that board members need to be aware of. And I think it requires more than just an affidavit to be signed when you become elected.
Of course.
So I think that if you don't take this type of course, you'd be doing yourself and your condo a disservice.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah, I can tell you I met with several members of the House, and it seems like everybody's in favor of this. The only fight that I've had actually came potentially from the Florida bar itself, you know, looking at it that it might be some burden for someone on the board to actually sit for 2 hours and take a class. I'm telling you, if you don't have the 2 hours to take a class and get certified, then where are you going to have the time to actually act as a good board member? And if you don't have the time to sit down for 2 hours and learn something to keep your condominium potentially out of litigation, out of trouble, then I'm sorry, you're not getting my vote for the board. And I know, as far as I'm concerned, it should be mandated. No two ways about it.
How long does it take to read the affidavit?
About 10 seconds.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, it's a joke, Karen. As we all know, it's a joke. And the funny thing is, in that affidavit, you're promising to enforce the provisions of your documents. Now, many documents contain illegal provisions.
They have no idea.
Right, so leave it to the state of Florida to certify someone if they promise to enforce the illegal provisions of their documents. That's how ridiculous this statute currently is. But let's get back to Spencer for a minute. I think the job that most people affiliate, at least for now, with your office is when it comes to elections, you have to monitor and review procedures and disputes concerning condo elections or meetings. And oftentimes you appoint monitors to attend these meetings. Now, I can tell you, I've been involved in many election fraud cases. What does your office do when it becomes clear that fraud might have occurred in an election?
Mm-hmm. So the thing is, with my office at this point, I don't have the authority unilaterally to make an association redo the election.
Right.
That authority lies with the Division of Condos, Timeshares, and Mobile Homes.
Right.
So if someone reaches out to me saying that fraud has occurred in an election already,
right,
I would say you've got to file a complaint with the division.
Got it.
And I assist people doing this all the time. I look over the complaints before they're sent in. But I think, you know, retroactively, that's really your only option.
Got it.
Of course,
got
the
it.
Better solution is to make the petition to my office for an election monitor so that we can prevent the fraud from happening in the first place.
And that's where I was going next, because under the under Florida law, if you're in a condominium and 15% of the people petition your office, you actually get to send a monitor to actually run the election. Can you tell us how that works?
Sure. So as you said, unit owners or a board member, anyone can initiate it, make a petition to my office with 15% unit owner signature or 6 unit owner signature, whichever is greater. And then we receive the petition, we validate the petition, and then once it's validated, we appoint one of our independent contractor election monitors to go out and conduct the election. And this is a completely neutral, independent third party that you can be assured has nothing at stake in the election.
Sure.
So it's an incredible resource, and I go to as many of them as possible. And what I can say is, if you do make that petition to my office, I can guarantee you it is going to be a fair election.
Right. And the association winds up footing the bill, not the 15% of the people that asked for it.
Yes, absolutely. The association is legally obligated to foot the bill.
I can tell you, as an attorney, you know, sometimes you get down to the election and you're like, wow, I'm not handling the election tonight. The election monitor is, and you kind of feel like you've been kicked out and, you know, like your job was taken away. But the reality is, the attorney, if the attorney's smart, you learn to work with the representative from the ombudsman's office. And quite frankly, if they're smart and if they have issues and legal questions that come up, the two parties should work together, and there's no reason to be at each other's throats, and you could work together smoothly as long as each respects the other's positions. Should go very fine. I've had nothing but, you know, ease when it comes to having an election monitor, quite frankly. So I think it works very, very well. But, you know, I see your role.
I agree.
Yeah, sure. Good. Sorry about that.
I was just going to say that I agree, and I think that it's such an important resource, because it can prevent the misconduct, the election fraud from happening in the first place, which is going to mean that the right people win the election.
Sure.
And that unit owners then don't have to file complaints afterwards like we talked about. The association isn't going to have to spend the money to redo the entire election process.
Right.
And, of course, the division doesn't have to spend time, money, and energy on these cases, which could have easily been prevented if an election monitor was present.
Sure.
So I think this is one of the most important things that my office offers. You know, as you know, unit owners don't have many rights in running their association. The biggest power they have is to elect the board. And for that reason, one of my goals for the Office of the Ombudsman during my time here is to monitor 10 times the amount of elections that the office has ever monitored.
Really? Really? Hey, as long as you get the petitions for 15%, good luck to you. You know, you've kind of portrayed your office oftentimes as like as a mediator between all the various different parties, all the various people that may have disputes with each other. And I can tell you, I've been a mediator certified by the Florida Supreme Court for a dozen years. And I think mediation is fantastic. You know, the HOA statute, for all that's wrong with it, I think it's right. I really think all cases, both condo and HOA, should start out there. And, you know, there's an arbitration division that hears condo cases. And with all due respect to them, they mean well. I think they do. But unfortunately, as someone who practices in this area all the time, arbitration, has become a disaster for unit owners. And what was supposed to be an inexpensive procedure has turned into a costly, time-consuming procedure, because the arbitration cases go on for way too long. The arbitrator refers you eventually to mediation. And then if the case doesn't settle, instead of the case going back to the arbitrator, it goes to court. So all of that money that was spent up until that point, complete waste of time. And, of course, every time an association loses at arbitration, they just appeal by filing for a trial de novo in court, and the unit owner now basically runs out of money, and they just can't afford it any longer. So what really meant to be a program that was promising to keep expenses down for unit owners, I don't doubt it, it's gone completely the opposite way. So my take is that the statute needs to be immediately changed. I really think we need to follow the HOA statute. Make cases go to mediation, not arbitration. But if you're going to keep arbitration in there, make the arbitrator finish the case if it doesn't settle at mediation. But, you know, I'd like your thoughts about the mediation process in general. Would you like to see, you know, cases actually start out at the bargaining table rather than start out in arbitration or even in court?
You know, I think the system could be better, as you said. I don't know the answer off the top of my head. It's something that is very much on my radar and very important because, as you know, there is a natural built-in inequity in these cases where the board gets to use everyone's money, essentially, to fight their side and pay their attorney. And the unit owner is unilaterally paying for his or her own attorney in this fight. So it's a very difficult situation.
Sure.
And as you know, if the association loses in arbitration, they really have no incentive to not take it to court after
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Exactly.
And oftentimes the unit owner has, you know, or the unit owner runs out of funds.
Exactly.
Or the unit owner doesn't want to engage in litigation, real litigation, because now we're talking about potentially being on the hook for 50, 100 or even more money, $200,000 of attorney's fees he or she loses. And this is something that I see.
Very important.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah, of course
so
it's a nightmare.
I think that the system could be better. And I do have a great relationship with Mac Rainey, who's the head of arbitration for the division.
Yes.
He's a fantastic attorney, super smart guy. And this is something that, you know, needs to be tackled, and I'm happy to be here participating in this discussion.
I'd love to see, again, these cases start out at the mediation table. I think it's a big, big plus. You know, and we kind of maybe glanced on HOAs for a second, and over the years, I can tell you, I've tried to get the Florida legislature to expand the jurisdiction of the DBPR over HOAs, but for whatever reason, that's always fallen on deaf ears. But I'm guessing that even when you come in the morning and those phones are ringing, they're not just ringing from condos, they're ringing from HOAs as well.
Help.
You know, and what do you tell them?
You're right, I do. I get calls from HOAs every day. And at this point, I just don't have jurisdiction to assist with those matters. I want jurisdiction. I'm hoping that I can get the legislature to give me jurisdiction and give me the ability to help with HOAs. Because, Eric, it's not just HOAs. It's master associations.
Sure, sure.
You know, a lot of times we have big master associations that control multiple condos, and then people call into my office, and then I have to ask, well, you know, is that related to a provision in your condo deck, or is that related to the master deck provision?
Right.
And they say it's the master.
Oh, then
sorry, can't help you
at that point.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
It's not right, and it is something that I do want to be rectified from the legislature.
Sure. I you know, over the years, I've certainly come to realize that some of the differences in the law between HOAs and condos just absolutely make no sense whatsoever. And, you know, it's about time that we sit down and kind of make some of the laws at least mirror each other. There's just makes no sense that there's differences. You take the same topic and condo treats it one way, HOA treats it another way, and there's just really no reason for it. But bottom line at this point, you know, what's your relationship with the Department of Business and Professional Regulation? You're not an employee of theirs, so, you know, what is the actual relationship?
Yeah.
Sure. It's a point of confusion. I am, you know, technically hired by the governor, but my office actually is administratively located within the Division of Condos, which is located within the DBPR.
Okay.
So I technically, you could say I'm an employee of the DBPR. And at this point, I have a great, great relationship with Secretary Beshears of the DBPR, who really is 100% committed to fixing our state's condo issues.
Great.
Like I said before, he was really the main reason why I had this opportunity to become appointed by the governor. And it was really because he knew that this office needed someone in South Florida that was going to be hungry and boots on the ground to fix our state's problems.
Sure.
It's not about having someone in an office in Tallahassee to answer the phone. It's about having someone mobile and located where all the problems are.
Yeah, sure. What's your cell phone number?
You know, I have a great relationship. Sorry?
What's your
cell Karen was joking. How about giving your cell phone number out to the thousands of people that are listening? But that would be a bad idea.
Would that be a bad idea?
So, well, bottom line, please. Spencer, what's the goal for your office at this point? Where are we going?
Sure. So, my goal for this office is I want the Ombudsman's Office to be a real, helpful, and accessible resource for unit owners and also board members, CAMs, and attorneys. And I want everyone that interacts with my office to walk away knowing that the state of Florida does care about them and does care about their condos.
Great.
And the last thing I'll say is that for the small minority of people, the 1% of condo owners in Florida that are living in nightmare situations with corrupt boards that are stealing and lying, I will not sleep until those associations are brought to justice.
Okay,
and neither will Secretary Beshears.
Wow.
Really?
So we are 100% committed to resolving those issues.
That's great to hear. And I, for one, wish you only the very, very best of luck. And I can tell you, if anything that this show can ever do to help you along those lines, we are here for you every step of
Absolutely.
The way. Let's do this. Let's take our break that we should have taken a long time ago. We're running late. If you have questions for the Ombudsman, now's the time. Very rare chance to ask some questions now. Taking your calls, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. Back right after this.
Are the roads, parking lots, and walkways in your community association in need of repair? Driveway Maintenance can help. We are the largest seal coating company in the United States and have been an industry leader for over 57 years in asphalt restoration, asphalt paving, parking lot striping and maintenance, concrete sidewalks, curbing, or ADA parking lot compliance. Let Driveway Maintenance pave the way and make your community look great. At Driveway Maintenance, we believe in well-trained personnel, top-quality equipment and materials, and friendly customer service. Our customers include office building complexes, educational facilities, hospitals, hotel chains, apartment complexes, and of course, condominium and homeowner associations, and the largest mall and big box retail companies in the country. Driveway Maintenance, Inc. is a LEED accredited, Green Advantage certified, environmentally responsible, full service asphalt paving contractor and seal coating expert. Driveway Maintenance serves the entire state of Florida and most of the southeastern United States. Call Driveway Maintenance for a free estimate at 1-800-432-1191. That's 800-432-1191. And you can visit our website at driveway.com.
Is your condo or HOA paying too much to heat the pool or spa? If so, now's the time to switch to geothermal technology with Symbiont Service Corporation. Geothermal technology with Symbiont Service is eco-friendly, green technology that harnesses the energy stored beneath the Earth's surface to heat and cool your swimming pool. Geothermal technology not only helps you reduce your carbon footprint, but rest assured, you can't beat geothermal for reliability and performance. It's even unaffected by air temperature. Best of all, Symbiont Service's geothermal solution heats like gas at a fraction of the cost and with a serviceable life expectancy of 15 to 20 years, which is 2 to 3 times as long as conventional pool heaters or more. And get this, geothermal technology by Symbiont Service can actually cool your pool in the summer months. Symbiont Service serves the entire state of Florida. Go geothermal now. Find out how Symbiont Service can heat or cool your pool and save you money. Call Symbiont Service at 800-881-4328. That's 800-881-4328. And to learn more about Symbiont Service and read the amazing customer reviews, visit geothermalflorida.com.
Is your condominium or HOA in need of accounting services? Look no further. Gerstle, Rosen & Goldenberg is one of South Florida's largest accounting and auditing firms, as recognized by the South Florida Business Journal, and is one of the few accounting firms uniquely specialized to provide accounting services to their growing condominium and homeowner association clientele throughout Florida. With primary offices in Aventura and Boca Raton, satellite offices in Naples and Orlando, and a professional staff of 65, Gerstle, Rosen & Goldenberg is prepared to meet the needs of any condominium or HOA in the state. The professionals at Gerstle, Rosen, and Goldenberg also have experience working with timeshares, cooperatives, hotel condominiums, mixed-use buildings, and ancillary operations like restaurants, spas, and country clubs. Put their 25 years' experience in your corner. Gerstle, Rosen, and Goldenberg, 305-937-0116. That's 305-937-0116. Or grgcpa.com.
This message is for anyone who has taken on the important responsibility of becoming an officer or director in a homeowner or condominium association. It is also for the management companies who work closely with these caring people to make sure things are done the right way. Hello, I'm Gil Pomar, South Florida Regional President for CenterState Bank, now the second largest bank based in Florida. Our bank, CenterState Bank, has an amazing team of professionals who are exclusively dedicated to the homeowner and condo association market. Your job is not easy. There are repairs and new projects that need financing. There are legal and social issues that need to be understood. There are also technology and servicing issues that your residents want to be improved. Why not choose a bank that knows this business backward and forward? Why not have a local banker who will meet with you face-to-face whenever it is convenient for you or your board? CenterState Bank has over 2,000 associations as customers for a reason. Please give us a chance to earn your business. Call Terry Russo at 954-633-1666 to make it happen. CenterState Bank is an equal housing lender and a member of the FDIC.
Here on 850 WFTL, I'm going to hand it back over to Eric quickly because the phone lines are stacked. Eric? Go ahead, Eric. We'll take our first call. Is Eric there? Oh, boy. Eric? I hear him. Hold on. We're having a difficulty because we've got, like, we've got the ombudsman. Do you hear me, Eric? Oh, no. What's happening?
Anybody there?
Yes, we're here. Oh, Lord. Want to go to a commercial
Hello?
And we'll sort it
Hello?
Out? Oh, there's... Okay, we hear Spencer.
I don't know. We lost.
And Eric.
Someday, you will need insurance. And for that day, you'll be glad you wrote down Insurco Insurance and Financial Services. Why? Because Insurco virtually insures everything. They're a full-line insurance agency that'll put together the best possible coverage and premium for almost anything. Need homeowners or condo insurance? Call Insurco. Need auto or motorcycle insurance? Call Insurco. How about golf cart insurance or trailer and RV insurance? Just call Insurco for a free quote. They're open every day. From renter's insurance, officer's and director's insurance, and personal liability umbrellas to all types of business insurance, boat insurance, cancer policies, life, health, and annuities. All you need is Insurco. Get a free quote. They service Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. Speak English and Spanish. Insurco Insurance and Financial Services. It's the only name you need. Office at 14401 West Sunrise Boulevard in Sunrise, inside Edmore Chevrolet.
Call 954-846-1206. 954-846-1206. That's 954-846-1206.
Right, let's give this another try. Let's go to Eric and get to the phones right away. Do you hear me, Eric?
Yep, now we're good. Okay, how about Julia in Hollandale? How are you, Julia?
Good morning. Glad it worked out. Good morning, Eric. Good morning, Karen. And I'm Batman. Thanks for coming over. Very interesting information. I have two questions. One is very local to me about the elections, and another one is just a comment. So let me start with a question. The question is, we have the election coming up, and usually by the 21st of December, the board member candidates need to submit their forms. Usually it's being announced. It hasn't been announced this time. And the current board members are very overt about the fact that they want to continue.
Right.
Is that a violation of any law? And if that's what they're going to do, is that going to invalidate their election?
So the current board members...
Announce.
Yeah. Okay, so the current board members are kind of like holding on as to who submitted their names, who submitted a notice of intent to be a candidate. So the bottom line is what they're required to do by law is you take the date of when your annual meeting is going to be, and you count backwards 14 days, right? And as long as those election materials, meaning the ballot and the envelopes and the resumes, basically, of the people who submitted their notices of intent, if it's in the mail at least 14 days before that election, then it's okay. The board acted appropriately. It's less than 14 days, then we have a problem. Okay, so that should answer your first question.
The fact that they didn't announce for people, didn't remind people to submit their candidacy, is that illegal or that?
Well, yeah, the first notice, right, should have gone out at least 60 days before the election, right? And that notice should have told everybody that they have a right to run for the board and that their notice of intent must be in at least 40 days before the election. If they didn't do that, then, as I guess Spencer will tell you, do over. All right, that's probably an illegal election if the first notice didn't go out, and it's time to actually start from scratch.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Eric, I would agree.
Second, thank you, Eric.
Sure.
Second thing is, permit me to comment. I think education is fantastic, and I personally attend as many Eric's classes as I can, always learn something new. It's fabulous. But I would like to use an analogy of planting. If you put a seed in a crappy soil, nothing is going to come out. If you educate a person who is not qualified or not prepared to do the job, the results are undesirable. However, it's going to create a false sense of security.
Yeah.
So I think it's actually dangerous in this case to do half measures. I would love to see the board members pass certain qualifications. They don't have to be rocket scientists, but at least certain qualifications, because they hold, they manage a lot of money.
Yeah, well,
and so I think qualification is one thing, education is another thing, and the test after education is also required, because anybody could sit for education and come out with nothing.
Julia,
so
thank you for the thanks for the call, Julia. Here's the thing, you know what? There are very minimal qualifications to be a board member. Basically, you know, no felony conviction, and you're on the board. You know, if you're current in your dues, you can be on the board, but it's tough to create more qualifications than that. You know, I understand sometimes, as Spencer was saying, these people are in charge of budgets that are seven figures, eight figures sometimes, you know, incredible amounts of money. But there is no law out there that says the person has to be an accountant, the person has to be an attorney, the person has to have some business experience. And I think, Spencer, that if we started doing that, you know, making it more difficult to become a board member, there'd be less and less volunteers to choose from. What's your thoughts?
I agree with you. You know, I think they're good ideas in theory. I think some of the ideas would be very hard to enforce. And at the end of the day, these are volunteer positions, right? So they're not paid positions. So
exactly.
We need to be cognizant of that also.
Yeah, you can't make it too difficult.
Like I said, I think they're good ideas. I don't know if I would support minimum requirements for board members.
Right.
You know, we have a lot of small associations also, right?
Exactly.
And then if we have these qualifications, you may be left with no one living in a condo that could be a board member.
Exactly,
so
right.
It's a discussion that needs to be had. And I think some of the things we talked about earlier in the show are steps in the right direction.
Sure. How about we go to Jack in Tampa? How are you, Jack? Jack in Tampa? Who do we got, VJ? Just put the next call through.
Yeah,
what
go
we
ahead.
Got?
Who's next?
Okay, we have John and Boca.
I got John and Boca. Let's go to John.
Well, hello, Eric. How are you?
Hey, John. Good morning.
I have a question. We have two residents that recently died, and they were the only people on the deed, and their deeds were not life-enhanced estate deeds or Lady Bird deeds. So my question is, other than a deed, legally, what specific type of documentation would a person claiming to be a representative of the deceased person's estate need to produce to legitimize them as eligible voters for the annual election and have their vote counted?
Great question. So the bottom line is, just to make sure I understand the question, you had two people whose name was on a deed, and now both of them died, right?
Yes.
So now some
separate Eric, we had two separate units.
Okay.
And each of those had only one person. On the deed, and
okay.
They were not life enhanced estate deeds or Lady Bird deeds.
Okay, got it.
So they both died, two separate units, no one else on the deeds. And my question is, legally, what type of, other than a deed,
sure,
what other specific type of documentation would a person claiming to be representative of the deceased person's estate
sure. Great question.
To legitimize them as eligible voters annual board election and have their vote counted.
And since the deed does not reflect who owns this property after their death, what that means is that a court proceeding actually has to start, meaning an estate, a probate has to be open. And the probate's going to be open normally, someone in the family, right, would petition the court and open up an estate. And they would, the court, the judge would name someone the personal representative of that estate. So you can look for, if you would allow that person to vote, you would be looking for an order from a judge appointing that person as the personal representative of the estate of the deceased. And if I'm running an election and I see that order signed by a judge, that's who I'm allowing to cast that vote at the election. But absent such an order, someone just comes through and says, you know, I'm the son, I'm the daughter, it's mine. No, it's not. Not until there's actually a court order that says so. So, again, I'm going to allow the personal representative, or I'm going to look for a court order that names someone the actual owner. Okay?
Okay, that's very good. I appreciate it.
You
an order
got it.
From the judge saying that someone has been appointed personal representative, otherwise they shouldn't be allowed to vote.
Bingo, correct. Okay?
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
You got it. Who else we got?
We have Steve in Palm Beach.
Steve in Palm Beach. How are you, Steve?
Good day. Thank you for taking my call, and I am one of your 21,000 students.
Thanks. We have a rumor.
Yeah. We have a gentleman in our building that has currently filed two separate lawsuits against the board. The rumor is that he might now be running for election to that board. Is that legal, and is it ethical?
Oh, that we get questions like that all the time. And if you like Spencer, you know, you want to like to answer that question. As you know, very, very few reasons to prevent someone from running for the board. Is the fact that someone may have a lawsuit against the board one of those reasons to prevent them from running?
No, I do not believe it is. Oh,
that's
I believe
right.
I would still be eligible to run for the board.
Yeah, very few reasons to deny somebody from running. You know, like I said, they would have had been convicted
so
of
then,
a felony.
Well, he's on the board. If he gets elected to the board, then he's privy to all the client attorney.
Wait, say that again. Say it again,
Steve.
I'm
sorry,
Steve. I didn't hear the... Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. You broke up.
If the person running for the board gets on,
yep,
and now he's part of the decision-making process on his own lawsuits.
Oh, no, he's not. Okay, that's
that?
That's a great question. So when and if that person does wind up getting on the board, if the topic of his lawsuit against the board comes before the board, he would obviously have to recuse himself from any decisions in that regard.
Yeah,
right?
But you know he'll still have influence over it.
Well, it shouldn't be. That would clearly be a situation where he needs to recuse himself, not have any say in that, in his own lawsuit, obviously. How about we go to Madeline in Fort Lauderdale?
Yeah.
How are you, Madeline?
Hey, Madeline.
Madeline in Fort Lauderdale.
Going once.
Nope, we lost Madeline.
Apparently.
Anybody
Hello?
Else?
Oh, wait, there
yeah,
she
we go.
Is. Oh, my gosh.
How are you, Madeline?
Hold on, I'm going to shut my radio. Yes, I have a question. I live in a co-op in Fort Lauderdale. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Hello?
Go ahead, Madeline.
Hold on for a second. Oh. I'm having a problem here. Hold on. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, hi. I have a question. I live in a co-op in Fort Lauderdale on A1A. And it's Coral Ridge Towers. We think that one of the board members, the vice president, is not a shareholder.
Right.
So how do we find out? Because I went on and I looked at the property, and his name is not one of the owners. Only his wife's name is on there.
Right.
So
yeah.
Hey, what do
Spencer,
we do?
Spencer, question for you. You have jurisdiction over cooperatives?
Yeah.
I do not, unfortunately.
Not over, because what the division handles, the division handles disputes involving cooperatives. In other words, arbitration cases wind up going, the recall cases go through the division, yet the Ombudsman's Office doesn't have any jurisdiction over co-ops. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So when it comes to co-ops, you know, Madeline, things work differently in a co-op. You know, when someone moves in, they wind up getting shares in the corporation, right? And they wind up getting not a deed, but they wind up getting an assignment of a, what's called a proprietary lease. So, yes, you need to go look. You said it's in Broward County. You need to go look at BCPA and find out who owns, who is the current lessee under the proprietary lease. If you're telling me it's only the wife and not the husband, you got to look at the bylaws. Yeah, you got to look at the bylaws of your co-op, and the bylaws probably say that only shareholders can be on the board, and if that's the case, husband out. But if the wife wants to run, the wife can run, but not the husband. Okay?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you
so much. Okay, so that brings us to the end of a pretty busy show. Again, I want to thank Spencer Hennings, the Florida Condominium Ombudsman, from appearing on the show today and speaking to so many of our condo owners throughout the state. Spencer, really appreciate your time today, and I wish you nothing but luck and success in the office.
Thank you, Spencer.
Thanks, Eric, and thanks for having me on the show. You too.
Our pleasure. Anytime. You know, like I said, this show is always here for you. It's time to get some legislation passed. We need to get the word out, and we need to get our listeners psyched up and contacting their legislators. This is the place to do it, so you're welcome anytime.
Thank you.
You be well. All right, and for everybody else, have a wonderful, safe week. The vaccine is coming out. A lot of good things to look forward to, hopefully. Maybe we're making the turn, and before you know it, we'll be back to meeting each other again in person at our condo and HOA meetings, rather than having to do all of this online, you know.
And we'll
have some educational classes in person. Can't wait for that, Karen, huh?
I know. Love it.
You know, don't get me wrong. Great seeing everybody online.
No.
But I love being with all you guys in person. Can't wait till we can start doing that again. But in the meantime, sign up for our December 21st online class. Just go to Condo Craze and HOAs to do that. And have a wonderful week, and we'll see you again next Sunday on Condo Craze and HOAs.
Thanks,
Be safe, everybody.
Bye.